from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. More claims every day, it seems, on NSA snooping. The latest round spying big on U.S. allies, on their people, on their leaders, and personal cell phones. Defenders say this is business as usual. We're crazy and risking American lives not to do it, they say. Critics say a post-9/11 green light and ever more powerful technology has sent the NSA rogue, that it's time to draw some lines, rein it in for ourselves, for our alliances. This hour on Point, American surveillance exposed and now, for the first time in a long time really, debated. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. How much is too much when it comes to NSA surveillance? Where would you draw the line? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us first today from Washington with the latest on the evolving NSA story is Adam Entis, national security correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. Adam, thank you very much for being with us. Who's in town from Europe and what are they asking for?
Well, we have some visiting delegations from the German government that are seeking greater clarity from the White House and from the National Security Agency on what exactly the U.S. has been doing in terms of bugging the phone of Chancellor Merkel and others in Europe, and they want to get a sense of the scope of the program to try to figure out what the U.S. policy is going to be going forward, and this has really put the White House in a bind.
Latest headline out of Spain this time, tens of millions spied on there by the NSA. We've heard this from other European countries. What are these big or were, you tell us, these huge sweeps of data about? What's the NSA been doing there?
Well, in the case of these recent disclosures regarding collection in Europe, there's a lot of unanswered questions that we're still trying to figure out as to what exactly that was being collected. According to those European press reports, we're talking here about cell phone calls, text messages, that sort of thing. But we don't really know if this is part of the metadata program that the NSA is running, whereby this data is being sorted and trying to figure out patterns.
Who called whom, but not what they said. The U.S.
Exactly,
version.
Exactly. Connections, or whether they're plumbing this for keywords, so-called selectors, which might be indicators of who might be who the U.S. might consider to be problematic, and requiring further a closer look, for example. So at this point, we don't really have a full sense of what that collection really is.
Is it still the Edward Snowden revelations that are driving all this exposure?
Yes, it is. No question about it. And, the several news agencies which have access, direct access to the documents, including The Guardian, as you know, they're putting these out kind of on a daily basis. And the hard part is really kind of understanding what the documents really mean. There isn't a lot of information on the documents. You really have to be an insider to figure it out. So there is concern about, potentially misinterpretations of the numbers, because we don't really know entirely what the numbers are representing.
Europe up in arms over this yesterday. Members of the European Parliament in Washington for a closed-door session with the House Intelligence Committee Chairman Mike Rogers. Here's a little bit of tape, Adam. This is from Germany's Elmar Bruck, Chairman of the European Parliament Committee on Foreign Affairs, saying the wiretapping on Merkel's phone and maybe more look to them like perhaps a criminal act.
If you had the feeling that your closest allies is spying on you, then it's difficult to talk to such an ally in an open way anymore. And I think we have to make a clear distinction between fighting together terrorism, but not spying on friends.
What exactly is Europe asking for, Adam, and what's Washington offering at this point, or do we know?
What Europe wants, obviously, is a ban on the U.S. spying on, allies in Europe and their leadership. What the U.S. is offering at this stage is they have, on a case-by-case basis, decided to remove some of these leaders. For example, Merkel was taken off earlier this summer when the White House learned that her cell phone and other work phones were being monitored. What the U.S. is doing right now is trying to decide, which of these allies it's going to remove. You can imagine in the world of spy versus spy, there is a lot of this going on both ways. The Europeans are trying to do this, at the same time to American officials and American leaders. Certainly the Chinese, we know that case, and we also know, you know, the Russians, the Iranians to a certain extent are doing a lot of cyber hacking, trying to get access to different things. And so the Americans don't want to close off avenues willy-nilly that are going to prevent them from collecting in the future if the situation changes. But obviously now, in order to maintain these relationships, they really need to, they're really moving rather quickly to try to pull back on some of these, but not all of these wiretaps.
Adam, you said that the White House had them pull back on Merkel, the tapping of Merkel, when they learned it was going on. Wasn't it really when they learned about the Snowden leak and therefore understood, somebody understood, this was likely to become public? Isn't that when they pulled back?
Well, I mean, the way we understand it now is that when the Snowden leak started coming out, the White House decided to do a review about what was going on. And as part of briefings to the president and his top advisors about what the NSA was doing, they disclosed this collection effort against allied partners and allied governments. That's what sort of led them to the list of 35 world leaders that were being monitored, which included Merkel and many others. We don't know the entire list.
Do we know when the president first knew this was happening? Is that perfectly clear or not?
It's not perfectly clear. And, I think, you know, you have to understand the president doesn't review the raw intelligence. He gets the finished products of the intelligence community. So in other words, in his president's daily brief, it might say something like Merkel believes or Merkel plans to do something. He doesn't know how the sausage was made to get that intelligence. But smart people within the government who've dealt with intelligence matters before know how that sausage is made. And how would the intelligence agencies know what Merkel thinks or what Merkel plans on doing without there being some collection of intelligence either from her or from her top advisors? So, you know, that is something that I think is only now are we beginning to understand the extent to which, the White House maybe wasn't briefed specifically about, or the president wasn't briefed specifically about every person who's being tapped. But certainly they know that this is how the information is gleaned.
And now the question on the table, what gets done about it if something is done about it? The president suggested yesterday that perhaps there would be a change. Here was an interview, a bit of an interview with the new cable channel Fusion. President Obama saying that as the NSA capabilities grow, they may need to be reassessed.
Their capacities continue to develop and expand, and that's why I'm initiating now a review to make sure that what they're able to do doesn't necessarily mean what they should be doing.
Adam Entis with the Wall Street Journal is with us. Adam, what's on the table here in terms of materially reining in, if that's on the table, what the NSA has been doing? The president's just talking about a review there. That's not a small thing, but that's not a boundary line either.
Right. Well, the way the administration has described it until now is that the president will set intelligence parameters. He'll decide what the priorities of the intelligence community would be. For example, he wants to know, for example, what Merkel plans on doing at the next EU summit, for example. At the same time, the actual targets of the intel collection would be decided at the NSA and below the president. And so what you might see as a change here is that the NSA might be required down the road to brief the president specifically on what the targets are going to be that they're planning on adding, which would give the White House greater oversight of the decision-making made by the NSA in terms of adding these targets. And that's the kind of change that I think people are looking at now, basically requiring the NSA to be more forthcoming in terms of how it's making the sausage with the White House, and so the White House can make determinations one way or the other about whether it wants to go down that path.
Adam Entis, national security correspondent with the Wall Street Journal. Adam, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
We're going to turn to the question of what the boundaries are here, if any, what they should be. Michael Allen joins us in a moment. He was on the National Security Council under President George W. Bush. With us right now from Washington is Jesselyn Radack, attorney, one-time whistleblower at the Justice Department, where she was an ethics advisor, now National Security and Human Rights Director for the Government Accountability Project, a Washington nonprofit. Jesselyn Radack, welcome back to On Point. What do you see having been exposed here? What's unfolding here, Jesselyn?
Hi, Tom. I think this is surveillance of a breadth and depth and scope that nobody anticipated. I keep hearing over and over again that, well, everyone spies. But historically, yes, everybody spied on each other's embassies and each other's intelligence apparatus, but not on an entire country's population and not on the personal devices of other presidents and prime ministers. So I think things have gotten really out of whack. And I don't specifically think that NSA has a great track record on reining itself in. And it seems kind of disingenuous for the president to set up a review board that's housed within the Directorate of National Intelligence.
I mean, it's been a long time, though, since 1929, when Secretary of State Henry Stimson said, gentlemen, don't read each other's mail. There's been a lot of spying since then at very high levels. Is this just a technology question? And if it is, other countries have a lot of big technology, too, don't they, Jessalyn?
Part of it is a technology issue, but part of it is a power and secrecy issue. And we have a secrecy regime that was put in place after 9/11 that expanded under Obama even further, which both involved illegal programs. I mean, the programs under Bush on warrantless wiretapping were illegal. Hence, we passed enabling legislation to give retroactive immunity. And here, a number of these programs violate FISA and the Patriot Act, as well as the Constitution. So we're having talks about that now.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Stop watching us, said demonstrators at a rally in Washington against NSA spying over the weekend. The whole world, or much of it, Europe certainly, in an uproar in the last few days about revelations of NSA surveillance there. We're talking this hour about what we need and want from the NSA, what we don't need and don't want from the NSA in the age of mega surveillance. You can join us this hour. How much is too much surveillance from the NSA? Does the NSA operating theory seem to be we'll grab everything and sort it out as we please? Should there be boundaries? You've had people speaking up and saying, definitely, yes. Here, more from that rally in Washington on Saturday. Craig Aaron with the group Free Press.
We need to hold our leaders accountable and stay in their faces when we go back to our local communities. We need to keep showing up until we have a government that doesn't just spy on the people, that actually answers to them.
And Europeans saying, what's going on? Here's the German Chancellor Angela Merkel talking about a newly exposed, revealed, provoked lack of trust between the United States and European allies. She was monitored.
I think the most important thing right now is to work out how Western allies can best cooperate in the future. Trust needs to be rebuilt. That implies that trust has been severely shaken.
Severely shaken trust, says the German leader on Sunday on CNN's State of the Union. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Republican Representative Mike Rogers of Michigan said the NSA's foreign intelligence gathering operations work to keep the U.S. and its allies safe. They ought to be grateful, he said.
If the French citizens knew exactly what that was about, they would be applauding and popping champagne corks. It's a good thing. It keeps the French safe. It keeps the U.S. safe. It keeps our European allies safe.
But not everybody was going with that. Yesterday, interview with CNN, journalist Glenn Greenwald, who's been all in the middle of the Edward Snowden revelations, responded to that Mike Rogers tape there. Here's Greenwald.
Well, first of all, a lot of people like to ask, why is there so much anti-American sentiment around the world? All you have to do is listen to that tape of Mike Rogers to understand it. He basically is going around telling the world that they ought to be grateful that without their knowledge, we're stealing all of their communications data and invading their privacy.
Jessalyn Radak joins us from the Government Accountability Project in Washington. She's been critical of a lot of the surveillance going on. Also from Washington with us now, Michael Allen joins us, a staffer, senior director on George W. Bush's National Security Council from 07 to 09. Until earlier this year, he was majority staff director of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence under Republican Chairman Mike Rogers, who we just heard there. Now managing director at Beacon Global Strategies, a Washington consultancy on security and defense, is also out with a book titled Blinking Red, Crisis and Compromise in American Intelligence After 9/11. Mike Allen, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
What's necessary here? What may have gone too far? Anything?
Well, I think you have to look at this through the lens of the two major intelligence failures in the last 10 years, at least since 2001. You had 9/11, and then you had the intelligence failure in Iraq. and basically what the Congress demanded.
In Iraq, meaning the assertion of weapons of mass destruction that were not there?
Right. The analytical misjudgments that were contained in the now infamous National Intelligence Estimate on Iraq. People demanded, Congress demanded better intelligence from the intelligence community. The reason that is it gives policymakers a decision advantage, the ability to make better decisions on behalf of the United States. And we asked the NSA to do a better job of collecting foreign intelligence. That's what they've been doing. And now they're a bit whipsawed here because they've been successful, apparently, in being able to collect and analyze the intentions of foreign leaders. And that's now exposed and caused a major foreign policy controversy.
Jesslyn, how about it? 9/11 and the Iraq WMD fiasco laid it on the table. We need better intelligence. Now they're doing it. We're upset.
None of those excuses has anything to do with spying on people who are our allies. In other words, the NSA should focus on individuals believed to present real threats. And surely this cannot justify dragnets on entire populations and on leaders who've been cooperating with us on the war on terrorism. In fact, I think it helps terrorists by eroding these trust relationships we have with Five Eyes countries and other allies. So this mass dragnet surveillance hasn't done a thing to actually catch an actual terrorist.
Let's hear some more of the talk out of Washington and Europe. Last week, the French foreign minister, Laurent Fabius, telling reporters here that something has to be done to rein it all in.
This kind of practice between partners that violates privacy is totally unacceptable. We must quickly ensure that these practices are no longer repeated.
No more, says the French foreign minister. But then, on the other hand, you've got Republican Congressman Peter King of New York saying President Obama should stop apologizing for the NSA spying.
The reality is the NSA has saved thousands of lives, not just in the United States, but also in France and Germany and throughout Europe. And, you know, the French are someone's to talk. I mean, the fact is they've carried out spying operations against the United States, both the government and industry. As far as Germany, that's where the Hamburg plot began, which led to 9/11. They've had dealings with Iran and Iraq, North Korea, the French and the Germans and other European countries. And we're not doing this for the fun of it.
What do you think at this point, Michael? I mean, they should be grateful that we've been spying on them. Does that ring true to you?
Well, it's true that we do cooperate with many of our allies in Europe and share intelligence. In many cases, they pass intelligence to us. And I think what Congressman King was referring to were some of the statistics released over the summer about how many plots that were helped to be foiled by virtue of some of the information that the United States passed to the intelligence allies in Germany and France. And so it's a complicated relationship that we have with some of these friends of ours. They are at once looking at us, and we're also trying to study them closely. I would just want to go back and say that it's really an exaggeration to say that an entire country's population is under a dragnet from the National Security Agency. They don't have the resources or the translators or the linguists to be able to trample upon the average German or the average French
person. May I just challenge that
privacy
for a moment?
Sure,
or at least help us understand then. Here you've got the Snowden revelation. This was in El Mundo, leaked to them out of the Snowden stuff. Evidence apparently that the NSA had recently tracked over 60 million calls in Spain in the space of 1 month. Now, you may say that's not everybody, but that's a lot of Spaniards.
Well, there's the idea that it's a dragnet and that we're listening to the content of their conversations, I think, is an exaggeration. What that could be referring to is, just as in the United States, sort of the metadata. That's a fancy word for who calls whom, that helps intelligence agencies all over the world do link analysis.
But you don't know that. You don't know factually that that's what they were doing with those 60 million calls. It could have been more. It wasn't in the U.S. It's not bounded by U.S. law.
It would be very, very difficult to collect 60 million conversations per month and do anything useful with it, because it would take resources and billions of dollars in terms of translators, analysts, and the rest to make use of that information. I think what it's more likely about is what you've heard many times in the United States, which is that if you want to be able to find a needle in a haystack, yep, you've got to have a haystack. And I think that's probably what these articles in Europe are referring to when they talk about these very vast numbers over the course of a month.
But Europe is saying, we don't want our chancellor's personal cell phone to be bugged. And B, they seem to be saying here, we don't want to be your haystack. We know that you've got these huge intelligence centers in the U.S., out in Utah and others. We know you can scan for keywords here. Maybe you're scanning for anthrax. Or maybe you're scanning for some economic advantage. That's been asserted here, too. But it's all in a black box, Michael. How are we supposed to create the trust that Angela Merkel's talking about?
Well, we're going to have to try and rebuild our relationships with our friends in Europe. Look, it's a fair point. They don't want to be spied upon, so to speak. And so this is something the White House is going to have to balance. They're going to have to balance the mission of the NSA, which is to collect foreign intelligence so that our policymakers can make better decisions on behalf of the country, versus the foreign policy damage that will be caused if these accesses are revealed like they have been in these cases. So I think that's what the White House is doing now. And I think that you're naturally going to see some contraction in terms of the collection the NSA is doing because of the foreign policy controversy that this has stirred.
Here was the NSA chief. This is General Keith Alexander. The bit you referred to there, Michael, this was in June. NSA director saying that surveillance programs on international communications had prevented a lot, more than 50, terrorist attacks.
In recent years, these programs, together with other intelligence, have protected the U.S. and our allies from terrorist threats across the globe, to include helping prevent the potential terrorist events over 50 times since 9/11.
50 potential terrorist attacks diverted, Jesselyn. That's what the NSA chief rolled out in June.
Well, I would say that what he rolled out in October, a week ago, testifying before Leahy, said he admitted it was really only one attack, or maybe two. And I think if you're looking for a needle in a haystack, it's absurd to keep making the haystack bigger and bigger. Furthermore, I think the metadata myth is a distraction. Obviously, no one's listening simultaneously to 60 million calls in 1 month. But the fact is, we're gathering this data and we're storing it. And metadata can actually tell you much more than content. Most content is just junk. The metadata reveals much more. Obviously, if you look at your phone bill, if you're calling Planned Parenthood or Suicide Hotline or, you know, your therapist or a divorce lawyer, that will reveal quite a lot. I really have to ask whether the diplomatic, political, and economic blowback is worth it.
And now we're looking at exactly that question and whether lines could be drawn. And if so, how would we know they've been drawn? How much can be transparent here? How much will be transparent here? Let's go to our listeners, Kate in Mystic, Connecticut. Kate, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. A little paraphrase here. I just want to say, give me privacy or give me death. You know, just as the cost of freedom is high, maybe so the cost of privacy would be high. Perhaps being secure is not worth the price of giving up your privacy.
So, I mean, do you really want to take that absolutist position? What if, as a result of drawing really hard, dark lines, we have terrorist attacks and you do get death? You still going to sing that song, Kate?
Yes, I will, because, you know, if it was, is it Patrick Henry that I'm paraphrasing?
Give me liberty or give me death. But wouldn't you have, would you have preferred some intelligence that exposed the 9/11 plotters before they brought down the World Trade Center?
Not at the cost of the privacy of its our citizens.
So, I mean, could you look into the eye of the families whose relatives died on 9/11, many, many, many of them, and say, my privacy is more important than your dad, your mom?
I think that's a question that you should ask them.
Privacy, give me privacy or give me death. There's a sort of a don't tread on me American view. I appreciate your call, Kate. Let's get one more right here. Richard in Haverhill, Massachusetts. Richard, you're on.
Yes, hi, Tom. The Wall Street report that Barack Obama had no knowledge that we were tapping Ilhan Merkel's phone.
Well, there's still ambiguity there, but that's the suggestion, yes?
Well, it started in 2002 when she wasn't even the chancellor there. So it's just hard to believe to me. And also, if he didn't know, where's the head of the NSA? Why isn't he fired? Why is nobody held accountable? Can you imagine if Barack Obama's phone was tapped and other foreign leaders in Europe were listening to what he was saying? There'd be outrage here in this country.
Yeah. Richard, thank you for your call. Michael, how about it? What a president knows. You worked for George W. Bush. What did he know? This began during his presidency. What do you think Barack Obama would we can credibly understand him to have known or not known?
Well, I don't know for sure, and this is obviously an evolving debate, and many reporters are trying to chase that down today. Here's what I can speak to, and that's that working at the National Security Council at the White House, you've got access to the most sensitive intelligence that is collected by the National Security Agency. It was delivered each day to my office, and I think that the National Security Advisor and others at the NSC, certainly who worked terrorism and worked Europe, must have had some idea of the sensitive accesses that we had because they were able to apply the intelligence that we collected, likely for calls perhaps to the German prime minister or to prepare for summit meetings, as you mentioned. And so I can tell you that I think that at least some in the White House should have been aware of some of these more sensitive accesses that we apparently had, if you believe the newspaper articles.
You were there. You were getting the feeds. Did you know? Hey, Angela Merkel calls her mom, you know, Mutti or whatever it was. Did you see it?
I can't get into what I saw and what I did, and I don't really remember. Frankly, it was a long time ago. But let me just speak generally to why a NSC staffer might be interested in knowing what people are, at least people are advising our allies of. We have a long-standing foreign policy objective of trying to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. The EU3, Germany included, has been involved in numerous negotiations with the Iranians through the years. The United States has a national interest in knowing what the German position might be on sanctions vis-a-vis Iran. And therefore, it's very likely that this is something that policymakers asked for, in fact, demanded of the intelligence community, because what they want to know is what are our allies and friends and enemies around the world, what are their intentions? What are they going to do so that we can make better decisions about what the president's policy should be?
There are national interests, Jesselyn. How does the country pursue them if it doesn't use effective intelligence? And where do you draw the line when, you know, your capacity becomes more and more almost limitless?
Well, I think the Five Eyes countries, and I think they all cooperate.
This is the old kind of English Anglo world of UK, Canada, US, New Zealand, that.
I think for even people who might be our enemy or countries we don't like Russia, gladly turned over terrorism information, for example, about the Tsarnaev brothers, and we didn't do anything to follow it up. I think countries will cooperate with each other if it comes to stopping terrorist acts, but monitoring high-level leaders to find out what their plans are has nothing to do with why are we monitoring 60 million calls per month of the general populace of these other countries of perfectly innocent people. That is building a haystack that we don't need. There's no need to create a whole data storage facility in Utah. Even if you're not reading this stuff in real time, it's just creepy.
I mean, I agree. It feels creepy, but you say it's unnecessary. How would we have found the Hamburg cell of the 9/11 terrorists? Maybe
because at that point, Germany was cooperating. We've been cooperating with Germany on that, and they gave us leads on that voluntarily without being surveilled.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about what we need and want from the NSA, and what we don't need and maybe don't want from the NSA in the age of mega surveillance. Michael Allen is with us from Washington, former senior director for counterproliferation strategy at the National Security Council, was also up on Capitol Hill on the staff of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, author of Blinking Red. Jesselyn Radack joins us. She is formerly with the Justice Department, a whistleblower there, author of Traitor, the Whistleblower and the American Taliban, now with the Government Accountability Project. Again, so much of this only coming out, it would appear, because of the controversial leaks of Edward Snowden, who was formerly an analyst for the NSA. Yesterday, in an interview with CNN, journalist Glenn Greenwald, who Snowden worked with, talked about the international state of mass surveillance and its political implications.
It is not true that every country intercepts the personal communications of their democratically elected allies, and it's definitely not the case that every country mass bulk collects the communications of millions of innocent people in virtually every country around the world. It's only the United States that's doing that, and probably only the U.S. and China engaged in this massive economic espionage.
Economic, there's another face of it. We'll look at that. Lots of response online here on Facebook. Why Sterling says it's gone too far. Giving the intelligence community these new technological abilities is like leaving $50 with your 18-year-old for an emergency when you go out of town for the weekend. You know it will be gone when you get back, emergency or not. Tyra says, yeah, yeah, we want to rein in the NSA, the FBI, the CIA until another terrorist attack happens on U.S. soil. Then we want spying back yesterday. Aaron in Omaha, Nebraska. You're on the air, Aaron.
Hi, Tom. Two things. First of all, I find it highly ironic that Peter King is the guy who says that it's okay for our government to look through my emails and my contacts and say that we should trust the government to be able to do that. Yet he turns around and invokes HIPAA regarding the Obamacare website because the government cannot be trusted to ask me whether I was previously a smoker.
Right. Okay.
The other thing is that I see the NSA kind of like, say, the New York City Police Department. They are meant to serve and protect, and they do that. But sometimes they go overboard. They beat up people that are arrested, or maybe some of their captains are taking money from drug dealers. And when that's found out, we have to do something about it. Likewise, with the NSA, we need to provide oversight. You can't, you know, when you're given all this much power, eventually it will be abused, and it is up to Congress to do something about that. But the Congress has completely abdicated all responsibility, first to the Bush administration and now to the Obama administration. We have to provide oversight.
I want to look at this issue of oversight. And Aaron, I'm very glad you raised it. Justin, you don't like what you see here. What would you do about it? What are the options? What would a reasonable set of boundaries here look like? And where would they be, articulated, laid down?
Well, in terms of oversight, another part of the problem is that NSA over and over again has disobeyed laws, plus it misinforms its overseers in both the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court and Congress. So that's a huge problem. If there is oversight, it can't function if NSA is lying. I represent a number of NSA people, whistleblowers, who are being prosecuted under the Espionage Act. Meanwhile, both the FISA court and Congress have talked about being misled. I think.
So same question, though. Aaron in Omaha says, I want oversight. It's my government. I want some oversight here.
I agree.
You're saying it fails. Citizen Aaron may say, come on, let's fix it. How could we do that?
We should do that by limiting the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court to what it was really meant to do, which was approve warrants for domestic-to-domestic communications, rarely, not to issue orders authorizing mass bulk collection on an entire phone agency. The FISA court is completely out of bounds. We need to have an advocate from the other side in that court, and I don't even think that court should be secret. It's not that hard to go to a federal judge in regular Title III courts and get a warrant. Additionally, the people on the HIPSI and the CISI, the Congressional Intelligence Committees, need to do meaningful oversight rather than just accept verbatim what they're told and repeat, the way Dianne Feinstein is, government memes, but really look at what is happening.
So an advocate for restraint overseeing the FISA court, how could that, let's say, hypothetically be arranged? An act of Congress, I guess that would take?
The Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court was set up through FISA. FISA has been amended most recently with the FISA Amendments Act of 2008. At a minimum, you would need an advocate to present the other side because the FISA court has approved every single order since its exception. It has been a rubber stamp. It has rejected one order out of thousands and thousands and no orders in the last 3 years. No requests at all have been rejected. So at least someone to give the opposing view. And I would order for greater secrecy in terms of the FISA court, which is starting to release some of its opinions, which are actually quite laughable and not sound legally at all. So the release of some of their opinions that are contrary to the law, so we can see how a
more
little
transparency
better, at least,
there. Yes. Michael Ellen, what about the idea of some oversight? You hear our caller, he'd like some. Would you think, do we have current means for reasonable oversight, and do we need more oversight? What would reasonable, real oversight look like to you? Would you welcome it or not?
Well, I agree with your caller that we do need aggressive oversight over the NSA and the intelligence community. The Congress—
Do we have it?
I think we do.
Really?
It's not always visible from the House and Senate Intelligence Committee because they, of course, work in secret and have hearings. But it's ironic that a lot of the problems that arose at the NSA are now known to the world because NSA discovered them, wrote them up, sent them to Congress and to the FISA court. And so these entities were able to have an iterative process with the NSA and work with them.
I think they're known to the world because of Edward Snowden. Dianne Feinstein said yesterday she didn't know about a lot of what was going on in Europe. You're suggesting the NSA revealed this? I just don't buy that.
No. I'm not saying the NSA revealed this. I'm saying the NSA wrote up reports about it and Snowden later leaked them. But Snowden wasn't the one who was able to determine that all of these things occurred within the bureaucracy of the National Security Agency. It's because the NSA reported on itself to the Congress and to the court, and the documents then existed that he was able to leak. But there
Feinstein
is aggressive.
Saying publicly that she was not aware of a lot of what we've now learned. So how good can that oversight be?
Well, she certainly has said she was aware of the Patriot Act 215 bulk data collection and the 702, which is the targeting foreigners abroad, their emails and their communications. I think what she said today is that she wasn't specifically aware of targeting of Angela Merkel. But let me just mention something and step
back.
But
that's the whole issue here, right? I mean,
I think that's part of it. Look, the intelligence community was created to collect foreign intelligence. This is their job. Their job is to find out what's going on around the world and present it in a way that the president and his staff and the Congress can understand it. They are the chief consumers of intelligence. This is what they do. And so a lot of intelligence professionals realize innately that this is what the National Security Agency was created to do, and they're doing a good job of it to help our policymakers make better judgments about U.S. foreign policy.
Is it a good job when all of Europe is now in an uproar about this? We may lose a big trade agreement with them in the next couple of days. U.S. companies who do business there are reportedly being cut out of contracts. We've got trust with allies that's deeply wounded here. Can you call it a good job in that case? Maybe they've gone too far with the new technology and its capacity.
And that's where the political leaders of the country, especially at the White House, need to make a judgment about whether the foreign intelligence value that you would gain through having certain intercepts around Europe will be outweighed by the foreign policy controversy if you have a leaker, in this case Edward Snowden, who puts all that information out and in effect reveals our playbook to those in Europe, causing a major foreign policy issue for the United States. And so this is, I think this is what the president is reviewing right now, which is what should our policy be on collection of friends in Europe and around the world.
I mean, Jesslyn, what's at the heart of that is this idea, and I think Michael's right, that for a long time, maybe since Stimson, you know, if we could do it, we did do it. In the Cold War, everything, you know, all's fair in Cold War. After 9/11, it just got turbocharged. I mean, is what's happening here that technology now becomes so pervasive and powerful that we have to indeed rethink our fundamental kind of guidance to our intelligence agencies, which was sort of go get it, boys?
Well, I think in the past, with the go-get-it attitude, that was when we were going after actual enemies, not entire populations of other countries.
That's all we had the capacity. You couldn't go after a whole population. Now you could.
Well, now we have super surveillance capacity, you're right, and laws have been amended numerous times, and that's how to deal with it. The other speaker said it's up to the president to decide, and it's not. America, the way a functioning democracy works, is that the people run the government, not the government running the people, and Congress decides. And basically, we have gotten no actionable intelligence from this. In fact, Keith Alexander, the general who headed NSA, admitted maybe one plot was stopped. But the major terrorist problems we've had, the Boston bombing, the Times Square's bombing, the underwear bomber, none of those were detected by all of this mass surveillance. I agree, we have this super capacity. But look, information is the currency of power, and this is all about power. And it is eroding trust with our allies and eroding trust with our own citizenry here in the U.S. to abuse it in this kind of way and collect on purely innocent people that have no connection whatsoever to terrorism and doing these massive dragnets on entire populations.
Let's go to Alex in Jericho, Vermont. Alex, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Couple points real quickly here.
Yeah.
First of all, I think that this is all a major distraction for mostly for America right now, but also for the American government trying to do business around the world right now and having to sort of participate in what I see as a dog and pony show where leaders like Angela Merkel, who were not terribly upset about this in the first place, have to now respond to the way the German people feel about this. And the fact of the matter is, I think what we should be more upset about is that this type of data collection doesn't do any good. And the fact is, you had a caller that said 9/11, if 9/11 could have been prevented by this type of data collection, then she would have preferred to have died instead of... We had the data on 9/11. We had that information, and we did nothing with it.
Yeah.
I mean, we could tap a million phones. It doesn't make any difference. We already have the information we need. We don't know how to use it.
I mean, of course, there is the issue of what do you do with all that data. But I want to roll back the tape here, Alex. I mean, you're saying this is a dog and pony show because the German people are really upset about it? I mean,
yes,
if the German people are really upset about it, these are American allies. If the American people are really upset about something, we like to give that a lot of weight. Doesn't the German people's thinking about this have weight?
Absolutely, and that's why Angela Merkel has a responsibility to her people to go out and speak and with one voice for the German people. The reality being what she knows about her intelligence community, I think, is sort of the reason why she didn't come out in the first place, because it is the nature of intelligence to secretly collect information. And that's also another problem, which is that people bring up what's happened, and yet the government can't really just come out and say, no, we did that because of this, because it's classified. So it's like you can't even come out and make a counter-argument against it. My point is, be it good, be it bad, be it right, be it wrong, we'll never know. So to me, it's just a giant distraction from whatever else is going on in the world. And yes, the FISA court is screwed up, and yes, there should be more transparency, but at the end of the day, what are the clandestine services if they're not clandestine?
Well, yeah, and yet they're for democracy. That should mean something, I think. Alex, I appreciate your call. I mean, Michael Allen, let's say that the U.S., Alex calls it a distraction, but it's a if so, it's with consequences, and maybe material consequences for the U.S. and its relationships here. Let's say the U.S. is deciding, I don't know what will happen here, but to draw some firm lines around some of this activity. Do you see the United States as being seriously disadvantaged globally if it should decide, in the context of its democratically elected leaders, to rein in global intelligence collection somehow?
I think so. If we overreact to this controversy and if Congress passes laws that restrict what the National Security Agency can do, and if President Obama, as a democratically elected leader, decides that we should collect less on some leaders around the world, I think the next time that there's a major incident or an intelligence failure, there'll be another commission, and the commission will examine, like they did over the two intelligence failures in the last 10 years, will examine why we weren't able to collect the particular information around the world.
But what about the cost of being seen as a pariah state or, you know, like global big brother who must be resisted? I mean,
I don't think that we're looked at as a pariah state.
Read the newspapers in Europe right now on this front. They're white hot.
I think there's a certain amount of irony from a lot of the politicians in Europe. First of all, we've got better oversight over our intelligence community than they do over what their own intelligence agencies are doing.
Yeah.
In many cases, they're not aware of the deep cooperation between U.S. intelligence and European intelligence. So, one, I don't think that they have the oversight over their own intelligence community, and I think that they are really trying to exploit a situation and take a lot of pot shots at the United States. I'm not saying that they shouldn't be coming over here and registering their disagreements with us about our collection policies. They can and they should. But I think that there's a certain amount of irony in a lot of the outrage that you see coming out of Europe.
Jesslyn, we just got half a minute here. You know this world pretty well. What's your best guess? Will we get a real change here? Or words, you know, and that's tutting and nothing.
If we can pass the Leahy-Sensenbrenner bill, I think we can get some meaningful change. And if we can get some of the pacts signed between countries about spying limits, we can get some change.
Well, the issue is on the table in a way that I don't quite remember it being before. Ironic, many ironies here, but another that Edward Snowden put it there. And now the U.S. and the whole world has a lot to think about. Technology is really pushing this. Jesslyn Radak with the Government Accountability Project. Thank you very much for joining us this hour, Jesslyn.
Thank you, Tom.
And Michael Allen, now with the Beacon Global Strategies in Washington. Michael, thank you for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Me at Tom Ashbrook, NPR there too. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.